Hey everybody, we're back on Curious Apes. I am Stephen Parton.
And I'm Donovan James.
And today we want to talk about art. What is it? How do we define it? What's it look like from the artist angle? What does it look like from the angle of the audience? Donovan, this is something that seems like you were pretty passionate about. What's your thoughts?
Well, I guess the idea has come to me before, and it's like, you know, how do we discern what art actually is? This can be like, you know, we generally consider that, let's say, a pornographic film is not art, but a scene in an Academy Award winning movie, you know, could be art. But what's the difference between the two? Is it the footage that surrounds it? You know, is it like a good acting and well-made movie making before and after it? Is it the lighting of the scene itself? Is it the gratuitous sex of the scene? You know, where's the delineation between what we consider art and what we consider pornography? Or, and if there is one, is it merely like just, you know, our own puritanical reservations projected onto the two platforms?
Well, if we're going to talk art and pornography, I think what we should really talk about is art versus entertainment. I think there's two very different delineations there that are very important. For me, when I watch film, I think of some movies as artistic masterpieces that I want to watch because they inspire me and they expand my consciousness, they provoke thoughts, and the scenes are shot with like this aesthetic perfection that just draws out this wonder in my mind. And then there's movies that are completely action-packed, full of humor. They don't challenge me artistically in any way, shape, or form, or intellectually or spiritually or anything, and yet I still love them. And so as an artistic creation, they still succeed in creating an emotion for me. But as an artistic creation for my intellectual thought-provoking side, they fall short. So I guess the point then would be, what kind of emotion are you trying to get, and is maybe the emotion that's provoked the point of art?
Well, then my question would be, is a purpose of art to entertain? Is that a requirement of something? Is that a requirement of art to entertain the... So why or why not?
I don't think the purpose of it is to entertain, because in terms of how we define entertainment, I think that undermines the full extent of what art is doing. I think art is more than entertaining. I think it's thought-provoking, which I find entertaining, but I don't know if everyone does. But I think, you know, if you go to an art gallery and you just look at this painting, I don't know if you would say you're entertained, but the fact that you are maybe looking at this field of wildflowers and this abstract, you know, surrealist thing, this painting by Van Gogh or something, and it makes you suddenly contemplate your childhood existence or like the blur of reality, and you're just like, holy shit, my mind's being changed right now. Like that's entertainment to me, but more than entertainment, I think that it's the kind of the purpose of art, and you can get that from art without being entertained. I don't think I look at, like, when I'm in the art gallery, I don't think anyone looks like they're having a riot, you know? I don't think anyone looks like they're having a jolly old entertaining time. They look very thoughtful, but I think that's very meaningful still.
Yeah. So we have, like, a thought-provoking as one requirement of art, and sometimes maybe a base level of entertainment is a requirement of art. Like, do we want, like... I guess if something is artistic, but it's also offensive to the viewer or to the reader or to the observer, offensive to the point that like you want to look away, you don't even want to observe it, then could it still be art? Is there a baseline of, you know, cultural handshaking that we have to have to art? You know, cultural, like that's okay, that's pleasant, or can something just be totally debased and revolting and still be art?
I think there has to be some form of. I don't think there has to be. I think we strive towards having some kind of symbolism that transcends culture, you know, like death and love and sex and suffering and happiness and things like that. But I think there's another way to look at it too, and I think we need to look at, for example, architecture. Architecture, I believe, is undeniably art. You look at some buildings and they are artistic masterpieces. Barcelona, you know, the Gaudi buildings, I believe, in Barcelona are without a doubt works of art. You know, the Sistine Chapel, it's, you know, like all of these buildings are literally houses of art. And in that, I don't think there is a inherent emotion that's being drawn out from anybody per se, but it's just the way the shapes play with each other in reality evoke some kind of like sensation.
Right.
And so, I think that is what artists are going for.
Yeah. So let's say we have like the Eiffel Tower and then we have like Kafka.
Okay.
Right. One is beautiful and one is, you know, literally a box. So I guess my question is beauty a requirement of art, or can ugly things be art too?
I think that is a situation where you're dealing with the subjectiveness of the words beautiful and ugly. What one person finds beautiful, another person might find ugly. And so that's where we get into an issue. However, I do think, for me, art that I like, architecture that I like, is novel. I like novelty. I think the truly good art, the stuff that is truly meaningful, the things that I consider art, are things that don't look cliche. If you give me a box and tell me it's art, I'm gonna laugh at you and go, you didn't think about that. You didn't do anything unique. You didn't offer me anything from your soul. I want something that is like, I want something in my art that simmered around in someone's consciousness and could only come from the simmering in that consciousness.
Fair, fair. But let's say there's a situation where every building in the world looks like the Eiffel Tower is a very abstract piece of art with lots of shapes, lots of curves, a lot going on. There's literally not one building in the world that looks like Kafka.
Mm-hmm.
Then when an artist produces a Kafka building, is it art by the distance it is from the cultural norm?
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because it challenged the cliche.
Right.
And it's not necessarily because it's a box that it becomes art, but it's because it's different.
Right.
You know, in that scenario, it's still different.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's where I think the artistic value comes in. We can go look at cities around the world and see all of these skyscrapers. And the reason that most people don't geek out about going into metropolis skyscrapers is because they all look the same. But when everyone talks about wanting a beautiful fairy tale vacation, they go to Europe where you have a span of buildings from, you know, 500 AD to 1800 AD that are constructed by masons who pass down secrets and variations, and the stonework and the handicraft is unique and one of a kind, whereas, you know, a lot of like modern cities are simply copy and paste rectangles.
It's something about art is that it's something about the distance between what we normally, you know, confront or normally deal with or as a part of our everyday lives, and then something when we create something that is some sort of distance away from that. You know, like if the world looked like, even that's not necessarily true, because then we have abstract paintings versus, you know, super realistic paintings. But then to some degree, the super realistic painting, we do consider it art because it was made by the human hand. And that's like, it's incredible that someone could create something that looks so realistic with just their hand and just chalk and just like, you know, pencils. On the other hand, to create something like Picasso, where it's this really trippy landscape that looks like nothing we've seen before, we immediately recognize that as art too, because somebody just brought that from somewhere inside their mind and had the, you know, willpower and talent to manifest it on, you know, to manifest it in real life. So I don't know. It's to some degree, you know, maybe art is something that we inherently know somehow, and we're somehow kind of, you know, in a squishy way trying to like feel ourselves, in a squishy nebulous way trying to feel ourselves towards. But maybe there is no concrete definition to it. Maybe it is just something that we kind of know.
I think inherently it's subjective.
Yeah.
I think that is the beauty of art, is that it is based in subjectivity. The fact that you can look at a building, you can look at a piece of art, you can look at, or you can read a book, you can read a poem, you can hear a song, you can watch a movie, and every single person having that experience on that same piece of art, even if they all are from the same cultural background, can all walk away with a different interpretation.
True.
They can all focus on a different part of it. They can all, you know, project onto it an experience in their past that was evoked by the fact that the Picasso head was just kind of tilted off the body in this way, and it made them feel like the disconnect of their body and mind, or somebody else might look at that and think about, you know, a quadriplegic might look at that and have an experience about what it's like to have a body disconnected. You know, like,
sure,
our personal experiences are projected onto artworks, and good art offer, I believe, everybody to make that subjective projection. I think that's when art shines.
But because it's inherently subjective, does that mean that there is no piece of art that we can objectively say, you know, regardless of your background, regardless of, you know, the culture that you come from, this is objectively good art?
I mean, is the
Mona Lisa, without regard to anything out of anything else, objectively a good piece of art? Is Picasso objectively good? Beethoven's, you know, art symphonies, are they objectively good?
I think that we can acknowledge talent.
Yeah.
And we can say that this was made with talent. But I don't know if that's the same as saying if it's a good piece of art. I think we can say that someone who created this beautiful sculpture is very talented, and this sculpture was well made, and therefore it is a good piece of art in the fact that it was created as a piece of art by somebody who was talented. So I think we can say that to some extent. However, the idea of what good art and bad art is something I don't really think we can do.
Maybe what it is that since your cultural background and who you are and your view of the world is inherently subjective, that means that the art that you create is made through a subjective experience. Maybe that's why, and a certain cultural experience, maybe that's why there's a social or subjective and cultural requirement when someone perceives it to determine whether or not it's good, because it was birthed from a similar social and cultural outlook. So my other question would be, so does art have an inherent value to society?
Yes.
Why?
I think because what art represents is the objective incarnation of the inner turmoil that we all share. And by having an external source to project upon, we all find a way to reflect on the things that are chaotically swarming around inside our consciousness. Therefore, if you have a character in a book or a character in a film who you relate to in some way, if they can draw out a character arc from your own life and allow you to relate to that character and see them come through an experience, then you get to either feel like you also have that experience or reflect on how your experience went in comparison. And in that way, you're kind of educating yourself. You're gaining insight on the human condition. You're getting appreciation for the malleability of reality. I think your brain is literally being forced to expand and grow, and you become a better human by observing art.
Yeah. I would agree. I guess then the concern becomes, like, say if, you know, books become so non-profitable to book businesses, they just stop making them, stop printing them, right? Do we allow that to happen, or do we as a people say, you know what, we need to prop up some sort of, you know, government, or if companies want it, like Google wanted to just, you know, give their money to it too, but it's such a setup of business to lose money to still print books or any art form that no longer made money, so that our culture still has that. Like, what if the people the majority of people no longer back an art form, like, you know, to such a degree that it cannot be printed in a capitalist society, and break even, like, do we allow it to die? Is people's disinterest a vote that artistic art form is no longer valid to the human experience?
I think we always appreciate the cultural zeitgeist, but if I may, I don't think the medium of the art matters as much as the purpose of art. And if I could say anything about art, if I can make a really bold statement, I would say all art really is a story. And what we want as human beings is we want a story. We want some kind of narrative to relate to, something that makes us feel connected to something bigger than ourselves, an escape from our current mundane reality, at least at this period in time, because we feel so trapped by living in boxes, you know? And so I think we yearn for stories, whether it's a sculpture that the way The arm is shaped just so, makes you feel like they're running towards something, and then suddenly a story expands inside your mind or the book. And whether it's the book becoming obsolete and becoming a virtual reality simulation or a story that you live inside, or, you know, whether music becomes some kind of broken down sounds that don't even really seem to have a lyrical structure anymore, I think we're still trying to pull out emotion from a story. We're still trying to explore a story. And so I don't know if it matters what the medium is, so long as we still feel like a story exists. And one that's, again, novel and not cliche. Right. Something that makes us feel like we're learning something new.
I kind of feel like we do have a responsibility as humans and a part of society to, you know, sustain certain works of art, even if they're no longer profitable within a certain system that we currently live in, that we might not live in 50 or 100 years. You know, it's almost like we can't let, you know, works of human art, or, you know, even avenues of human art be squashed out by, you know, the train of culture that we're currently on. You know, I don't think it would cost us too much to, you know, subsidize certain art forms to make sure that they stayed afloat for a while, to see if maybe they would, you know, become profitable again, or if the interest would rise in them again. But on the other hand, I also understand the idea that, you know, maybe there is a sort of free market of art that, to some degree, maybe we, you know, should let it determine what we like and don't like. Like, if we all decided that EDM music, one can hope, that is no longer a good form of music and nobody finds interest in it, you know, maybe that doesn't mean that we necessarily need to save it or need to push it up. But I don't know, I think it's a gray area.
I think we should definitely give subsidies to art. But what I would say to you is, do you think that we should, for some reason, demand that classical music is still made? Or that we still have music from, you know, that we still have jazz being forced upon people? Like, I still love jazz and I still love classical music, but that doesn't mean everybody of this modern age needs to. And for me, as someone who believes in Eastern philosophies, I don't really strongly agree with attaching to anything, much less a form of art. So I don't really completely agree for all of my talk about the uniqueness of the European buildings and whatnot. I don't agree necessarily with holding on to old buildings because they're old. I think if we have an opportunity to get a new artist in there and create a new building and create a new living space and try something new, I want us to feel like we can progressively move forward and grow our culture. That doesn't mean we can't have centers that cultivate this. That doesn't mean we can't have jazz clubs. Like, doesn't mean we don't have classical music performed in symphonies. That doesn't mean people can't do these things. But what it means is that we don't force it upon people, and we allow new ideas to thrive.
Well, I think in terms of architecture, it would be super easy for anyone that wanted to create new architecture to do it outside of the old architecture. That's definitely not a zero-sum game, you know?
No.
No one's knocking down.
I'm not saying we should destroy all buildings.
Right, yeah. But in terms of like say classical music, I'm not saying anyone has to be forced to listen to it. But to some degree, I think we should keep a physical record, literally, of that music, so that we have a copy of it. You know, we don't want to lose it in case we lose everything else. You know, it's like, so I guess what I'm saying in that case is that, to go back to the original point, is that, you know, if Beethoven's symphonies are, you know, the closest thing we have to the combining talent with objective, you know, aesthetically pleasing art, then it's a requirement of us as human beings, as part of the culture that we choose to build, to save a physical copy of that so we don't lose it.
But we've done that to the best of our ability.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that we do that. I think that we are all historians. I don't think we have ever stopped making history, and especially not now in the digital age, where we're talking into a camera right now and everything we do right now online is going to be stored into the echelons of time infinitely.
No pressure.
Because memory is free. You know what I mean? Like, that's why people are terrified of things being online, because we are great at making history now. So I think we're doing that more than ever now before. And I mean, with things, again, because I can't help bringing it back to there, but with things like virtual reality and whatnot, we'll be able to recreate, store off simulations of, 3D capture pieces of reality and pieces of art, and make them completely immersive and infinite throughout time. So, I mean, we're in a better place than we've ever been before to take the great works of art that still have persisted through the time and create immortal copies of them.
So to kind of go back to a different auxiliary point where we started at. So say you have something like someone playing Candy Crush on their phone, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then let's say you have The Last of Us on the PlayStation 3.
Okay.
And I think I would objectively say that The Last of Us is a higher, is better art, or maybe is art, and Candy Crush is not. But is that valid at all? Like, is there a difference? Another way to phrase this is that let's say like the Departed, that's Martin Scorsese mm-hmm. film, versus Transformers. Is one a better piece of art than the other?
Again, I think that's where we have to draw the line between art and entertainment. I think one creates a story and a narrative of novelty and human insight, and insight to the human condition, and something that's thought-provoking and creates this narrative structure that speaks to us, you know? Yeah. And the other one is like, I've got 10 minutes to kill, or like, I'm going to throw something on the background. So, I mean, I think that there is a difference there between what the goal is of the person. Again, if it's subjective, I think some people will say, hey, like, I love having Candy Crush to kill 10 minutes of my time. I can't always play Last of Us. It doesn't fit into my, you know, like a game like that doesn't fit into my life. When I'm ready to explore a narrative, this long, deep story game, right, you know, is meaningful to me. But for the most part, I just need this entertainment when I'm waiting for the bus.
But The Last of Us and The Departed are still entertaining. Like, they contain contain the thing that people desire in the less artistic examples we're using here.
But I think it depends on the type of people.
They just also are thought-provoking.
I think it depends on what you think the human being should be consuming. Do you believe that people should have mundane, mind-numbing things that don't really do much for you but pass the time? Or do you believe that everything we create should be something that has pure soul poured into it and is something that, you know, it feels like a rare glimpse into someone else's consciousness?
That's a good point. I don't think that we should impose what someone else should do or how they should spend their time. All we can do is, you know, we can choose for ourselves, and I would obviously make one choice over another. And I think, I wonder though, if from birth you gave people insights into a deeper part of human existence, and you showed them the beauty and wonder that is contained in learning something and in expanding your mind, if they wouldn't naturally and with, you know, full independent desire choose those thought-provoking pieces of art, and less people would choose the superficial art if they were shown the beauty of it maybe at a younger age.
I agree, but what that requires is a situation where every human child has the luxury of a stable home life and nutritious food and opportunity. But the world we live in creates within pretty much all of us this broken child that did not get enough love, did not get the right foods, got a bad environment, was handed, you know, was around parents who were angry all the time or drunk all the time or working all the time at a school where the teachers were poorly paid and didn't give a shit about you, and walking home dealing with, you know, urban issues that terrified you, and then you went home and didn't have a book and you didn't have inspiring art, and all you wanted after a day of serious suffering and strife and difficulty is to play Candy Crush for 10 minutes to turn off your brain.
Well, I would never say that someone you shouldn't do in that situation. And we're back to the argument that I think a lot of conversations that people find themselves in about deep topics is that, you know, it's the world as it is versus the world as we want it to be.
Right.
And, you know, as the world as it is, I mean, I honestly, you know, that's one of those situations where we can never impose how someone should live, but all we can do is, you know, open up the door to what we think or hope is a better, more fulfilling life. And, you know,
would you like to see a world where things like Candy Crush weren't commonplace?
No. I mean, I think that if you show people a different way, less people will naturally choose to play Candy Crush. I think some people will. I think no one should say that you can't, but I think we made the world a better place, and we didn't have all those issues you're describing, mm-hmm. schools and, you know, kid in public life. then there'd be less of a desire for superficial escapism.
So if the world was a more idealistic place, the natural human proclivity would be to go towards art that was more thought-provoking rather than superficial.
Do you think so?
We'd still have as much entertainment that was... Do you think we'd have... You know, do we think we'd have something that was still fart jokes next to Shakespeare?
I think so.
In a highly evolved, highly spiritual, highly enlightened
community. I think as long as humans fart, there's going to be fart jokes. As Louis C.K. put it, like, it's a sound that comes out of your butt, smells bad, and makes a toot sound. Like, there's no way that's not funny.
Maybe that was a bad example.
So, I don't think we should ever, like...
Will there always be a Candy Crush?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, that's fine if there is. You know, it's like, I guess there's really no difference between Candy Crush and like any card game that, you know, people play. And I don't think there's anything, you know, wrong with that. But I do think that I think our desire for superficial escapism would decrease if we lived in a better world.
I think that's a great place to end it.
Cool.
All right, then. I would recommend creating as much art as possible, whether you think it's superficial or... brilliant or whatever. Create. That is my personal belief. Donovan, do you have any closing thoughts on that?
No, I think I'm just in it.
All right, everybody. That's Donovan James and Stephen Parton on Curious Apes talking about art. Thank you for listening.